Now, my friends on TalkSport and on Talk, to say the 90s were a tough and turbulent time for Tottenham Hotspur is a bit like saying water's wet or that Gazza liked to wet his whistle. The decade itself started with the 1990 World Cup and ushered in the Premier League era, B Sky B and the money. It also saw Spurs nearly go bust, change ownership, get thumped 6-1 by second-tier Bolton and have 12 points deducted before a single ball was kicked in the 94-95 season. Oh, and one of the trophies they won was under former Arsenal superstar manager and player George Graham. Ouch. A decade of, in the words of author Gareth Dace, a season of magic, mayhem and mediocrity, and he charts the ups and downs and further downs and the occasional up of his beloved Tottenham in his very first book. It's a belting read, folks. It's called Is Gascoigne Going to Have a Crack? Spurs in the 90s, published by Pitch. And I'm delighted to say Gareth Dace, author of Is Gascoigne Going to Have a Crack, joins us now. Good morning, Gareth. Congratulations on a fantastically readable book, which is much more than just a book for Spurs fans. It really sums up the decade and the changes. I mean, that maelstrom of change that we all live through as football fans and as individuals. Can we start by asking you to remind us the kind of state Spurs was in financially at the very start of the decade, because they were desperate to find new ownership, new money and a way out almost, weren't they?
Yes, they were. It was there were a really dark financial cloud circling the club as the 90s started, to the extent that there were, I mean, I was only 9 years old at the time, so I can only vaguely remember, but there were newspaper reports saying that Spurs could potentially go out of business completely. And the only way that they were going to alleviate those financial problems was by selling their biggest asset, who unfortunately, for Spurs, that ended up with Paul Gascoigne leaving us. But yeah, there was a real chance that, you know, Spurs could have, you know, really, really fallen off a cliff as the 90s were starting.
And of course, Gascoigne's move to Lazio was suspended for a year because of injury and stuff. But there was a time, I've forgotten this as well completely from the book, which is it's Gareth's personal memories as well as the definitive history of the club through the decade. Robert Maxwell was very much a front runner to buy the club. I mean, thank goodness that didn't happen.
Yeah, well, he it turned out that he had loaned the club some money to make sure they could make the final instalment on Gary Lineker's transfer in summer of 1990. And he was in the background and was very keen to take over the club, probably because he knew what was around the corner with the World Cup and the success of that had occurred. And it came within moments of Irving Scholar selling the club to Maxwell in 1991. And I was saying, you know, fortunately for Spurs at the time, you know, Alan Sugar came to the table and had a banker's draft in his pocket, having worked out a deal with Terry Venables where they would jointly take over the club. And I think we all thought that that was the dream ticket at the time. Venables to look after the football and Sugar to look after the business side of it.
And what comes through very early on is that Eltel misjudged Alan Sugar, but also, I think, overemphasised his own importance as he threw it to the club and to Alan Sugar. I think he thought he was going to pretty much run everything with Alan Sugar very much the man in the background, just doling out the cash, which was never going to happen, what we know now of Lord Sugar.
No, well, I mean, they both completely underestimated each other, exactly as you've just said there. But the relationship turned sour very, very quickly. So within a month, there were disagreements over what players they should be signing and how much could be spent and who was actually going to do the deals and even who was going to be sitting in the director's box. So it was fascinating to unpick all that apart. And again, as a kid, I, like probably 99% of Spurs fans, was totally behind Terry Venables at the time. So that was a sort of a big falling out, and that had huge ramifications for the club going forward.
Legal ramifications, but also some of it seemed to be avoidable, even down to the fact that I think Lord Sugar says, you know, at one point he's complaining about where the season tickets for him and his family are, given they're right at the back, whereas Eltel's are right near the front. You think that's the kind of thing that somebody as smooth as Terry Venables, one would think, would have got right?
Yeah, well, they both completely underestimated themselves. I think Venables thought Sugar was going to come in and just let him run the football side of it. And, you know, equally, I don't think Sugar understood just how revered Terry Venables was and just how closely he had links with the media. And so that everything really sort of unraveled pretty quickly, unfortunately, because in theory, that should have been a really good partnership.
And of course, I mentioned in my rambling intro there about the arrival of the Premier League and the arrival of money in the shape of ITV and B Sky B. Of course, Lord Sugar was quite instrumental in making sure that money was up to the kind of amount that nobody had even dreamt of before.
Yeah, well, this was the famous blow them out of the water comment that he made, where the 22 Premier League clubs had to decide who was going to go and televise football. And he had a vested interest in Sky coming in. because he was making their satellite dishes. And I mean, this is all well documented through his book. I took a lot of this information from, but he was obviously aware of the sort of money that he thought ITV were going to bid, and you know, famously rang through to his contact at Sky and said, "Blow them out of the water," which Sky eventually did, and you know, that really revolutionised the way that football was consumed and certainly the amount of money that was coming.
When you look back to, I mean, we're talking 20 odd years ago now, but I think it was a bid of something in the region of £306 million over 5 years. But even then, ITV, I think, only lost out by a single vote. It came that close to being, you know, not really the Premier League that it's evolved into, which is in no small part down to the then owner of Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about fine margins in football, but yeah, absolutely. You know, that is an incredibly fine moment and a seminal moment in the development of the way that football became commercialised and the way that the Premier League launched, and we had this as they branded it, this whole new ball game.
And curiously, Arsenal and Man United's then chairman, they were very much in the ITV camp, which seems slightly ironic given how much they benefited down the years. Is it fair to say then that in different kinds of ways at all levels, Alan Sugar was regarded as a kind of disturber, a disruptor of football at this time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in many ways, he was an innovator. So I think it was he that understood what Sky could bring to the table. There were other things that he did. I mean, I would say that he was really one of the pioneers in the revolution of top world-class players coming into England, as he did when he signed Jurgen Klinsmann in 1994. There are many ways that he was slightly ahead of the game. But, I mean, unfortunately, as we found out, there were ways that he wasn't ahead of the curve. And his, I guess, reluctance to have people around him once Venables left who were real football people and understood the football side of it, we began to lose our relevance and our position at the top table.
Mind you, you're still attracting amazing players. And we're talking to Gareth Dace, whose first book is called, I'm sure it won't be his last, Is Gascoigne Going to Have a Crack? Spurs in the 90s. It's published by Pitch, of course, and you can follow Gareth on Twitter at Gareth Dace, or at X, as it's now called, at Gareth Dace, D-A-C-E. I mean, we're talking, well, Neil Ruddock, Andy Gray, for example, and even superstar, and the man who scored from the halfway line for Spurs, Jason Cundy, whose picture's on the back of your book.
Jason Cundy is one of 109 players who appeared for us during the decade, and all of them have name checked at least once within the book. But Jason Cundy, who you wouldn't know from listening to him on TalkSport that he played for Spurs or enjoyed playing for Spurs, but he scored one of the most remarkable goals of the decade.
Oh, listen, he does mention that quite a lot. We all know it's against Ipswich, and it was. I think when he's in a puckish mood, he claims it was deliberate. It was a win taken clearance, was it? A bizarre goal.
Well, yeah, I mean, I watched him on the few occasions he did play for us. I mean, unfortunately for Jason, he got quite a serious injury. But yeah, he obviously, that was the only goal he scored for us. I mean, he didn't make many tackles for us, but that one ended up being a goal as well, bless.
And when you look back at the players from that era, one who stands out certainly for the latter part of that decade has got to be David Ginola. And I didn't realise again until reading you, but how close they were to signing Spurs at that time, not just Ginola, but also Emmanuel Petit.
Yeah, well, for the book, I've managed to speak to Jerry Francis, who was, you know, his manager throughout the middle part of the 90s.
What a job he did. I mean, what a great manager he was.
I mean, Jerry is very, very proud of his achievements. He was the last manager that finished as the top London club with two different clubs. Of course, he'd done very well at QPR before he joined us. But yeah, the Petit story, one of those what-if moments that he had been talking to Petit and Monaco for quite a while, and they'd agreed a deal for him to come. But Monaco had this prolonged run in the UEFA Cup throughout 1997. And by the time they were knocked out, the transfer window had shut. So the deal couldn't then be done until the summer. And, you know, tragically for Spurs, Arsene Wenger had got his feet well under the table by that point in the summer. And although Petit came over and had a conversation with Francis and Sugar, and they agreed in principle a deal, he was then lured and taken in a taxi, unbeknown to Spurs, that they paid for to meet with Arsene Wenger and Petit signed for Arsenal.
That's the fantastic ways football worked in the days before social media, when everybody became a reporter and a journalist and whatever. And then we turn, and the book turns to the George Graham era, whom Spurs fans couldn't really ever bring to chant his name, could they? What was he, the man in the overcoat or something?
Man in the raincoat, yes. Yeah. As we won the League Cup, and I was there in 1999. As he walked off the pitch eventually, the closest we ever got to any sort of mutual respect was singing the man in the raincoats, blue and white army. And that was that really, really divided the Spurs supporter base when he was appointed in 1998. And for a very short period, he did bring us success with that Worthington Cup. But, yeah, it didn't last long.
He also seems to me to have a kind of the pattern or the sheen of an older school of management, a bit like Eltel, Tony Venables. You mentioned the fact that he had close links with, for example, Fleet Street Papers that he never really dropped. It was almost like he was channeling his career first and his time with Spurs or wherever it was second. It was very much George Graham FC was what seemed to be important to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly Alan Sugar didn't speak very kindly of George Graham. I think he probably regretted appointing him. And there was, right in the final chapter of the book in that last season, after we got knocked out by Fulham in a League Cup tie, which, Alan Sugar was very upset about, and then saw George Graham going off with one of his journalist mates. And then the following morning, the newspaper put the headline in there that George Graham said that there's no money to spend and that he can't take the team any further. And essentially that case ended up going through the courts and Sugar won it, as he invariably did in court.
And the curious thing is, when we look at the way, in retrospect, that Spurs season, that decade, which was disappointing compared to what had gone before, actually had huge highs in it, huge moments, but not just for stopping other teams, but, victories abroad, players who were superstar players still are regarded as being unique in the game, like David Ginola, who's a former colleague of ours at Talk Sport, for example, some of the biggest names in football, and, of course, people who've always got huge affection for their time, I suppose, like Gary Lineker.
Yeah, well, when I started writing the book, really, I was doing it with the idea that the 90s was a period of real mediocrity for Spurs. And, of course, there was mediocrity that festered into the club as the decade went on. But, yeah, there was great moments of magic, which is why I was really keen to incorporate that into the title. So you've got a pantheon of Spurs greats that go through the decade, in Gascoigne and Lineker, through to Sheringham, Klinsmann, Anderton, to David Ginola, at the end of the decade, and some incredible moments and cup wins and trophy successes and incredible moments where we score four goals in just under 5 minutes against Southampton in 1993. So all those moments, the big sort of moments, and then you've got those more sort of lesser forgotten or more forgotten moments in there that I think hopefully reading the book brings back to life.
In fact, certainly, and I should remind my producer, who's a Southampton fan, about this, it was four goals in a Premier League record, 4 minutes and 44 seconds. All the fours on that one there. I mean, that's an amazing, amazing record to have there. And, the book's got great interviews with people, including our colleague Paul Hawksby, my mate Paul Coits mentioned it, of course, who's the Mr. Spurs half-time and does a lot of interviews and stuff for the club. Is there anybody you really wanted to interview you didn't get to talk to for the book? Because, it's incredible. It's one of those books that I think is kind of exhaustive, but not exhausting. And we get your personal story in there as well, Gareth. I mean, if there's a second edition, or you would decide to update it, whose interviews would you like to stick in there?
I suppose that, someone like Darren Anderton, who was part of the club for so long and then played at sort of the back end of the period. I mean, I was very grateful to everyone who gave up their time to speak with me. But, yeah, often I hear people talking and sharing stories. And I think, I wish I could have included that as well. I mean, obviously, Lord Sugar himself would provide some incredible insights. There's so much I could get from his book, but I guess talking to him in person might draw out some more information that would be interesting. Jason Cundy. How about him? I'll chat with Jason one day.
He's always available. He's a gob on a stick here. Top man, Jason. And great photographs in the book as well. I mean, you've got Gary Lineker looking at 11 beside Eltel, wearing his very 90s shirt-tie combo. Also, you've got the last photograph in the book, inside the book, is of the then-Spurs captain, Sol Campbell, being consoled by George Graham following their UEFA Cup elimination against Kaiserslautern. That was November 1999. Nobody could have thought that within a couple of seasons, Sol Campbell would have done what for Spurs fans was the unthinkable.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, that was the beauty of the book, really, because the book ends on effectively the end of May 2000. I can leave it on a bit of a cliffhanger. I mean, unfortunately, we all know what happened next. But, by the end of the decade, Sol Campbell was our captain. He was our talisman. He'd lifted the League Cup at Wembley the year before, and we were all desperate for a team to be built around him and for the club to have the ambition that he wanted as a player. Now, of course, if I was continuing the book and I was going through to 2002, my slant on him would probably be very, very differently. But seen purely through the prism of the 90s, or at least the back end of it, he can be remembered slightly differently, perhaps.
Absolutely. Of course, and we get your growth and development as well from somebody who goes and sits in these £3 kid seats to somebody who then is effing and jeffing at the referee and the officials and looking for goals on a university campus somewhere in Yorkshire. So it's a great read as well from Gareth's part. Remember, it's Gareth Dathie, also it's his first book, I'm sure it won't be his last, with a brilliant foreword by that fine, hugely important sports writer and Spurs fan, Julie Welch, published by Pitch. For more info, your Twitter once again is it's at Gareth Dace. Is that right, Gareth?
That's correct, yeah, at Gareth Dace. Dace is D-A-C-E.
Marvellous stuff. It's a great read. Seriously, folks, is Gascoigne going to have a crack? Spurs in the 90s, magic, mayhem and mediocrity. Nothing mediocre about this. Great read by Gareth Dace. And he's our special guest on our Book of the Week slot, because it is our Book of the Week on TalkSport and on Talk. We'll be live till 5. Cheers, Gareth.